Jeff Ogilvie survives Wingfoot.
Now the moment Aaron Bradley has waited.
Gary Webb is the five-time Australian Open champion.
Golf at its best by one of the best in golf, Peter Thompson.
Standing in front of a crowd like this today and win the PGA Championship is pretty special.
He's done it at last. Greg Norman.
Gets his name on the Stonehaven Cup.
Leishman to 11 under. Now we've got a new leader, kids.
Here it is, Adam Scott. A life changer. Coming up next, you have unrestricted access to golf across Australia and the world. Thanks to Golf Australia, we're going inside the ropes. Subscribe now on iTunes or your favourite podcast app, or head to golf.org.au.
Welcome to Inside the Ropes, episode 52, a Ma-free zone, which is going to be controversial because I'll have no control of our co-host today. I never have in previous episodes. And I can't see this being any different. So I welcome along heartily Mike Clayton. Back, it won't be a Ask You Anything segment, but I'm sure we'll end out in that direction anyhow. So welcome, Clayton.
Thank you, Hazzy. Nice to be here.
And Blakey, Martin Blake, I hope you're the voice of reason in here because it could get messy otherwise.
Well, I'll try to be. Funnily enough, I've just come from having a typhoid shot because I'm going overseas. So if I start sort of foaming at the mouth or anything, it won't be because I'm kind of fired up about something. It's probably...
How will I pick
emergency.
The difference between you and that and a rant?
Well, did I have a rant last week? I probably did about something.
No, it wasn't too bad, actually, last week.
No, looking forward to the show.
No, it should be good.
Where is Murray, by the way?
Well, a big Tasmania. Congratulations to Murray. He's rattled up another year. He's turned, I think, 54. He probably won't want me saying that on air, but he's 54 this week, and he's gone off with the bride to celebrate in Tasmania. So I don't think he's packed the sticks, so maybe Bumboogle and Lost Farm have avoided a Mar treat, Clayton?
Well, I'm at Bumboogle on Friday, so I can't believe he's not going to Bumboogle. Like, I mean, you have to go to Bumboogle if you go to Tasmania, don't you?
What if your wife takes you down there for your birthday? Do you pack the golf sticks?
Well, there's a spa there and a nice hotel, and there's good food, nice view over the river and the
he's
ocean.
He's probably going to Wine Glass Bay or somewhere. Yeah. Or drinking Tassie Pinot.
That's more his style. Yeah. I think he's a St. Helens Wine Glass Bay Freycinet operator. We'll check with him next week.
It's a beautiful place, Tasmania, isn't it?
Oh,
get driving over it. It's incredible.
Superb.
It's a magnificent place.
Good.
We definitely need to take this show on the road down there. This week, above all weeks on the golfing calendar, we're really excited. I think, Clayton, I'm right in saying this is probably your favourite week, I want to guess, but this is the Open Championship. 147th edition rolling up to Carnoustie, one of the most famous courses on the rota, and we're going to have a lot to talk about that. Is it your favourite week of the golfing year?
It is, because it's the most interesting test. It's the most interesting group of courses set up the best. You know, they're not obsessed as the USGA are with par. Augusta's the same thing every year, so there's nothing new with the golf course. But this is... Whilst they're all links courses, there's great variety in how they play and the questions they ask. So, and this is the hardest one probably.
Blakey, is it? Would you rather have in your little abode the green jacket or the claret jug?
The claret jug, I think.
Wow, that says it all. I'm a green jacket guy, but I bow to Clayton's opinion on the sameness of the tournament.
I've done a little survey over the last few years of Australian players, and I think most of them say Open Championship number one, but probably some of the younger players kind of lean, like someone like Jason Day, for instance, is obsessed by winning Augusta.
Mm.
So, you know, I think with Augusta, Clayton, the thing is that Australia had such a wretched history of trying to win that thing, that and in particular Greg Norman, so who was obviously extremely popular with the public. So that kind of builds up the Masters in the Australian psyche, whereas if you go to other places, maybe more so the Open. So look, it's hard to distinguish really, but the Open is a very special week. How do you refer to the Open Championship? Well, have you trained yourself to call it the Open Championship?
I have trained myself.
And I've
got to put it in capital letters, otherwise the RNA are into us like a rat up a drain.
I wanted to mention this because Rod Murray wrote a piece on I Seek Golf about a week ago where he talked about this, because a lot of Australians, as we all know here, Kate, you know that a lot of Australians just call it the British Open, and Americans clearly call it the British Open.
Yeah, Peter Thompson always called it the British Open.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
he's probably fair enough to have
an opinion.
The correct name, for the listeners who aren't familiar with this, the correct name of the championship is the Open Championship. And sometimes colloquially they call it the Open. So if you want to look at their website, it's theopen.com, for instance.
Mm.
But there's a lot of Opens. There's an Australian Open, there's a US Open, there's an Open in most of the main golfing countries. So is it not a little bit I just wonder whether it's a little bit pretentious to just call it the Open Championship in this modern day, even if that's the correct name of
it. I don't mind them trying to call it that, but it's not time honored. It hasn't always been that, so let's not get onto that trick. But I don't mind them doing it, but I don't like them jumping down your throat when you refer to them as the British Open. That to me is a method in the media of explaining yourself a little
more
clearly.
But do they do that?
Yeah, they do. And the RNA, I mean, they do so many good things, so I shouldn't pot them. But that's one of those things that it comes off the wrong way. And people here, we could be talking very normally about the Australian Open, just calling it the Open, and clearly it's got no comparison to the Open. But by way of explanation, that or the US Open or the British Open, it makes sense in an explanatory sense, but in a marketing and a branding sense, which is the world we live in, we're now the Open.
So if it's a Open, if it's the Open and not the British Open, why don't they play in the south of Ireland?
That's a really good question, Clates.
Because they're playing in the north next year, which is obviously part of... Huggy will be all over me if I get this wrong. It's part of the UK, right? Or Britain? Or what's the correct term for...
We're going down a very, very dangerous road here.
Britain includes Wales.
I think even Donald Trump got confused.
Northern Ireland's British.
Northern Ireland's British, clearly. Yeah. But Ireland is separate and not part of
Britain.
Ireland is not part of Great Britain, is it?
Ireland. It's not.
Yeah.
It's a republic. So
is that why they can't take?
What's the United Kingdom? Isn't that just the Scotland, Wales, and England? Anyway, look, we're getting well off track here. Probably a different podcast. But
well, here's another one for you. Speaking of Huggy, you know he'll have to sort of fill us in on this, but you know, a few weeks ago I called is it Russell Knox, the Scottish player? I called him American, and I very quickly got an email from Huggy saying he is not American, just a brain fade. But Canoosti.
Mm.
So I went to the 2000. We've all been to Canoosti.
Yeah,
I haven't played it. You two have. When I went to Canoosti, I asked some of the locals how to pronounce it, and they tell me it's Canoosti, not Carnoosti.
Canoosti.
Yeah, it was like the Gullen and Gillen and last week, the Scottish Open.
The correct way to say it is Canoosti. Okay. If you really want to get it, it's probably Carnoosti or something.
Yeah, anyway, did you, did Huggy point out that the leading Scottish women's player is Caris Davidson?
Yes. That's gold from Sanctuary Lakes or Sanctuary Cove. Yeah. All right, so this is it's a big Open preview here, and we'll come back and talk about the Australians and also the course more in a second. But just we are going to listen to Henrik Stenson and Jordan Spieth. We'll also later in the show catch up with Adam Thorpe, who put his name up in lights this week. Fantastic win at the World Junior Championship at Torrey Pines in California, no less, joining Jason Day and Tiger Woods as names on that famous trophy. I've got an absolute ream of paper here about the amateur achievements around the world. So it's going to be a big show across all sectors of Australian golf. But as we said, this is Open Week. Blakey, you touched on it. We've all had the good fortune to be at Canoosti. Clates, where does this one sit for me? This is one of the great courses on the Open Rota, I think. Canoosti, thanks, Blakey. Canoosti is arguably the most savage test of all the regular courses on the Rota.
Well, they're all great in their own way. They're all different. Birkdale probably it would be a favourite of the pros, but not. I would put it as the eighth of the eight, because I think it's pretty
Birkdale.
I think the great thing about the Open is the quirkiness and the unfairness of it, and how it's unpredictable. And Birkdale is very predictable and fair, so which is why most pros love it. But I would much prefer the quirkiness of Royal St George's or the Old Course, of course, which is the quirkiest of them all. And
yeah.
Prestwick, which is not on the Open Rota anymore, but was the original where they held it. But Carnoustie is the hardest, I think. I mean, the back nine at Troon is incredibly difficult when you play it into the wind, but the front nine,
you can go
going out downwind, you can do the 32-42 trick there.
Yeah.
But Carnoustie, 18 holes all up, is the hardest for me.
What was your personal experience of playing it?
Missing the cut every time I went there.
Did you?
Far too hard for me, yeah, just horrible. But, in fact, Huggy caddied for me in the Senior Open the day after his wedding, and we managed to scrub it around in one or two too many. But this week is going to be different because it's like every other course in Britain, it's brown. and baked off and hard and short. It's going to be playing really short.
Well, this is unbelievable, isn't it? That some of the tweeting operation by some of the players that have been there practicing. I mean, Brant Snedeker for one, and I think Padraig Harrington said that he almost drove it in front of the 18th green. Yeah. So I mean, we're going to see some incredible stuff. I'm quite excited about this because, you know, we're always on about how far the ball goes. I mean, this week the ball's going to go, well, they're 400 plus yard.
Yeah, 450 hits. Into that. But so it's, you either play it with an iron off the tee, which I suspect is how Tiger might play it.
Yes.
Iron off the tee into play. And I saw him hit a 5-iron, I think, off the fifth hole the other day. Because there's a bunker, like 220 out there to avoid. And plus, there's a burn across the fairway. So they'll either be taking irons and hitting the fairways and avoiding the bunkers and going from there, or take driver and just bombs away.
So do you think it brings...
Before we dissect the course a bit further, Blakey, it's perhaps more opportune rather than us, as we actually hear from the 2016 Open champion, Henrik Stenson. Of course, the winner at Troon, the other course that Clayton's mentioned. Let's hear from Henrik Stenson about just the difficult nature of the Brown course at Carnoustie.
How's it playing out there?
It looked pretty burnt yesterday. I think it'd be very fiery and bouncy. We had a bit of light rain last night, so maybe that softened it up a little bit, but it's going to be tricky, I think.
And is there many holes where you need driver? Is any ones that you absolutely have to hit driver around here at Carnoustie?
It's going to be a few, I think. But I mean, the big challenge or thing to consider in your game plan is really, do you want to try and lay back and avoid some of the bunkering, but still have that tough challenge of hitting the fairways when they get that bouncy, or you'd rather let loose and take it up there and then most likely be in the rough, but you're going to have a shorter shot at Sandown, maybe to the green. So there's a few decisions to be made this week.
And coming off the back of your Open win 2 years ago and that amazing final Sunday against Phil Mickelson, is this golf course set up any similar? Do you see any similarities to here in Troon?
I'd take 20 under around here, I know that much. I guess you do on any golf course. No, it's a slightly different golf course, I'd say. I think Troon, the front nine is quite scoreable. Yeah. And then the back nine, you've got to hang on here. It's a little bit of a mixed bag all the way around. It's got a very tough finishing stretch here, the last four holes. I think you're pretty happy if you're shooting average par on those holes every day.
They're the words of Henrik Stenson, the 2016 Open champion, one of the greatest displays of golf we've ever seen.
He won't be hitting too many drivers because he never does.
No, that's right. I mean, three woods is, I think, probably the biggest thing he
nuclear.
Carries. Yeah, nuclear. Mm. A good way of describing it. And he mentioned there, Clates, the challenging closing section, predominantly the final four holes at Carnoustie, the long par 4, 15th, a very long par 3, 16th, the burn crossing the 17th twice, creating an island fairway on the 17th, and the 18th in the exact opposite direction to the 17th with the famous burn, and a nasty hole in its own right. But particularly, and when I played it, I found the biggest challenge for me as an absolute hacker, of course.
What did you shoot, by the way?
I think I shot high 80s.
Why were you scoring? Why didn't you just go and play?
No, I was just playing. I sat at them up afterwards. I really didn't mind. My point actually was my best hole that I played was the 17th. I laid back a bit to make sure I didn't hit it in the second part of the burn on the 17th tee, and it left me with a really long shot in for my second, and it hit the flag and dropped, and I made a birdie. And I thought, these closing holes aren't that hard. But then I turned around and we played it into the wind on the 18th, and it was an absolute beast, beast. And I think that's the difficulty with the course. One of those last two holes, and arguably up to three, will play into the prevailing wind, and it can be a nightmare.
Yeah, they're difficult. 18 especially, as we all remember Vanderveld, how difficult that was. But again, it depends on how... I mean, the course is going to play, no matter how wide the fairways are, it'll play incredibly narrow because it's so bouncy. So anything that's kicking
it's
anywhere...
It's going to be hard to control even a good shot.
Yeah, so the angles and... So anyone who's hitting it marginally offline, it'll be accentuated by the bounce and the angles off the tees. But, I mean, it's a hard... Whilst the 14th hole is a difficult hole to... an easy hole, in inverted commas, it's a hard hole to make four, too. And everyone's going to be assuming they're going to make four there, which is the famous Spectacles par 5.
Mm.
But if you don't make four there, you're dropping your shot. So, really, the difficult finish starts at the 14th. And 12 is a 499 yard par four.
Yeah.
So,
and it's got some of the most famous holes in world golf. I mean, we all, you know a little bit more about St Andrews probably, but is it the sixth Clates with Hogan's Alley? We all refer to Hogan's Alley in you know our club golf, but this is where it's from.
It's like Kingston Heath,
which they've changed since Hogan played there. They've moved the bunkers.
So can you explain the background to that story? I mean, it's an amazing story.
Well, the story, there are bunkers in the middle of the fairway, and the left side is lined by a little wire fence with the fairway grass, short cut fairway grass, running right under the out of bounds. So there's no border of longish grass to stop your ball from sliding under the fence. So it's a fearsome out of bounds penalty. And the Huggy swears that he's spoken to blokes who say it's not true who were there, that Hogan drove it down the left every day between the fence and the bunkers, and then ripped it up by the green. And
it was the only open he won, is that correct?
The only one he played in.
Yeah.
So what do you mean it didn't happen? Like
Huggy will tell you that it's a myth and it's apocryphal and he didn't drive it down there every day at all. But
there's a plate there to recognise it.
Wow, well, there's a plate for, there's a plate on one of Donald Trump's golf courses signifying a battle that never happened. But the funny story about the plate is that Arnold Palmer was at Troon with Tip Anderson, who caddied for him in the two opens he won. And he got to the 16th. He said, where's that plaque? He said, Tip, and, you know, that plaque, that famous shot I hit. He said, about 350 miles south of here, Arnold, at Royal Birkdale.
will the fast, fiery course, is that going to bring even the shorter hitters back into it?
Well, it brings Tiger into it because that was the way Hoylake played.
Royal Liverpool.
Yeah. So it's almost as though you've got the contest between a clay quarter against a grass quarter how do the tactics match up? So you've got guys like John Rahm who are going to probably take driver and bombs away and just drive it as close to the green as they can, as Henrik was talking about. Or you do what I suspect Tiger will do and plot his way around with an iron. So it's going to be fascinating to see how these guys play and how they blow themselves out of it by playing recklessly early on or if they do and how it turns out. Because we're assuming that there's not going to be enough rain between now and then to soften the golf course to change the way it's playing as it is now.
And one of those guys who's going to make those choices, and it seems like he's fallen in the direction of even using a 4 or 5 iron, he mentions, off the tee, is the defending champion, Jordan Spieth. And he faced his big press conference, the champions press conference, earlier today.
I feel like I'm in a position now with every part of my game. I've kind of attacked the places that really needed some strong work. That combination with an open championship, the way it needs to be played, I think is a really good spot for me to kick back into shape.
Jordan, you hinted at it there, an open championship, the way that it needs to be played, but these are pretty extreme, fast, firm conditions. Have you experienced anything sort of similar, and what do you make of them?
I haven't played one hole yet, so I don't. I'm just going off what other people have said and what I've seen so far. I've talked to a couple of my friends, and they said it's extremely baked out. And then I talked to Michael a little bit about what he thinks, and he's like, you might hit a lot of 5 irons off the tee, and then you have a lot of, you know, you might wear out 5 and 4 irons off the tee instead of hitting like 3 or 2 irons like you're used to, and then you might you kind of wear out your mid irons somewhere like 6 to 9 irons from if you play to the fat spots. And I think a couple longer hitters might take driver a lot more because I don't think the rough's as bad, but I'm not sure what my strategy will be yet, but I'm sure it'll be up there with the firmest conditions I've ever seen.
But in anticipation of that, is it a challenge that you expect to relish?
Absolutely, yeah. I love links golf. I always have. I very much enjoyed coming over here. I guess the firmest conditions I can remember ever playing might have been the Open at Muirfield. The weather was perfect that entire week, and it baked out. But there wasn't much wind, so it didn't play. So if we get wind with these kind of firm conditions, that would be certainly a treat. But hopefully we get a pretty even draw. I think everybody always hopes for that going in. That's the one thing the Open can bring. You can actually eliminate half the field with one bad afternoon of weather Thursday or Friday like at Troon. Which is always disappointing to come over here and kind of have that happen if you're on the wrong side. Obviously, pretty nice on the right side. But looks to be a normal one this year, and you'll see guys playing this golf course very differently. You'll see a lot of different strategies.
Some sage words there from the reigning champion, Blakey. And, you know, no one will forget what he did last year. One of the more extraordinary finishes to any major championship. But he's obviously got his head screwed on, right, Jordan Spieth?
He is great to listen to. There's no doubt about that. And he will be a factor this week, you'd expect.
What did you make of that, Clates, that he could use 4 or 5 iron off the tee and bring in 6 to 9 irons instead of going driver and wedge like some players like Rahm, who could potentially do it the other way?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's how you decide to play the holes, really. There are a lot of holes that can play the same way there. 4 and 5, you can hit, you know, they're sort of 4 iron, 5 iron, 7 iron holes. 4 iron, 5 iron off the tee, perhaps, and 7 iron to the ground. I mean, much different than when I played there a few years ago when it was playing quite long and it was soft. But, you know, it's there are a bunch of holes, like 11, 10. You know, do I take an iron and give myself a long second, or do I take driver and shorten the golf course up by a whole lot? But if you take driver, you'll be playing out of the rough most of the time.
So normally at Canoosti, we just say, you know, you must be on the fairway to win this championship. But does the dry, wispy nature of the rough mean that it brings in the capacity for people to hit shorter wedges and still be able to potentially win the tournament from the rough?
Yeah, I mean, in America, the stats will tell you that you get closer to the hole from the rough and 120 yards away than you do from the fairway at 150. But it might be different here.
Okay.
Because there's such perfect fairways to hit off. And, you know, because the greens are so much firmer and bouncier than they are in America, then if you're in the rough, do you have any control over what the ball does after it hits the ground? And the key is going to be able to control your ball after it hits the ground.
Clates mentioned Tiger Woods potentially doing what he did at Royal Liverpool in 2006, which I believe he hit one driver for the week. That's
yeah, he snap hooked it off the 16th hole, which is a big wide fair par 5-y.
But for the people listening, our listeners, Hazy, a 2-iron off the tee hitting onto a concrete fairway like we'll see this week. I mean, these guys are going to hit, if they're hitting 2 and 3 irons, they'll hit it 300 yards, won't they? Yeah, maybe a bit more.
Yeah, you can be 100 yards of run in places like this. So
yes.
Yeah, I mean,
so it still puts you in short iron range to the average par 4.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, that's true.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating week. It always is. It's going to be a test to see if you can keep your eyelids open, Blakey, from the three.
Who do you fancy are the Aussies?
Well, that's what
you mentioned. Leishman last week was your...
Yeah, I still think Leishman's clearly the standout player in terms of form and, you know, for that matter, ability to, you know, contend with open championship conditions. And he is the one who can adapt better, in my mind, than most of the others. I think Cameron Smith could fall into that category ultimately. And I think Lucas Herbert's also very capable of doing that. Let's run through the Aussies, actually. So, Blake, if you want to run through all 8 of them, and maybe I'll give you the names and you tell me, you know, what you expect of them. Perhaps Jason Day.
Yeah, look, I've never fancied Jason for some reason in Lynx conditions. He's a high ball hitter.
Yep.
I don't think he adapts to it all that well. Having said that, he was close at St Andrews a few years ago.
Shot behind there.
But I don't, generally speaking, fancy him in Lynx. But you know, he's good enough. You know, if he can adapt, fine.
Clates?
He'd be a chance.
Day?
Yeah, it depends how he plays, obviously. I mean, he's clearly capable of winning. Depends whether he gets his skates on and hits good shots. And I mean, I always think he hits the ball. Looks like he hits the ball. He could do with watching a few Peter Thompson tapes to me, Jason Day. Perhaps that's old-fashioned. But Thompson had a beautiful
not
control.
Not go at it so hard?
Well, it looks like he hits everything so hard. It looks like his game's based around playing at Muirfield Village in America, which is hit it as hard and as high and as long as you can. Because that's what works in America.
So you'd like to see more like three-quarter shots and stuff like that, knockdown shots?
Yeah, that's how the best Lynx players have, I think, played over time. I mean, even Watson and Nicklaus took full swings at it, but they controlled the force of their ball and the trajectory of their ball so well.
Mark Leishman's our second contender.
So Leishman, have a listen to this. Tied fifth 2014, tied second 2015 when he was in a playoff at St Andrews. Tied sixth 2017. He's had those three finishes in the last 4 years. That's pretty good form in the conditions.
Yeah. If that was a Melbourne Cup contender, you'd have him very handy.
Not all Lynx courses are the same. We've already said that, but that's pretty good form in the conditions. How much do you reckon Mark Leishman's won this year, Clates, just out of interest? I looked this up the other day, given that it's a wraparound season, but he hasn't won anything. So
2 or 3 million, probably.
3.25 million.
Wow.
3.25. Pretty good.
Money in it. So, yeah, I really like Leash's chances this week, but obviously he's got to play to his best.
Let's rotate a bit. Cameron Smith, Clates.
Yeah, good. I like him here. Straight, great wedge player.
Played well in Scottish Open.
He played well last week?
He did. Played well in Gullin. Okay. Didn't.
Because he hasn't had much of a
run. Prior to that, he's been struggling.
There's much of a run since Augusta. But, yeah, he's. Yeah, I think this could be perfect for him.
All four rounds under par at Gullin.
Yeah, but that was, you know, pitch and putt there.
No, but it's just showing you that his game's not far away.
And they shot 60 to win.
That's true.
But although the scores, I mean, only, what, 1,200 was leading after 3 days? So
yeah, it wasn't crazy.
It wasn't like it was crazy low.
No, I
think he's really good. He's a great wedge player. And if it's playing short and there are a bunch of wedges, then and he can get on the fairway, then he's got a good chance.
Blakey, Adam Scott.
This would nearly be the story of the week if he wins it, given what happened to him at Lytham in 2012.
With Fanny on the back.
He's got Fanny Sunnison on the bag. This was in the news the other day. Fanny, I don't think, has caddied for anyone since maybe Henrik Stenson or maybe someone since then. She's actually a certified golf coach. She was coaching Henrik Stenson at one point. When I heard that, I wondered whether Scotty is actually using her as a coach as well. It didn't really say in the articles, and I didn't have the chance to ask him, obviously not being there, but... Scotty's been mucking around with his coaches lately. He's not working with his brother-in-law anymore, and he was actually dabbling with a guy called George Genkis.
I think he's back with his brother-in-law. He's left George.
Well, he's definitely left George.
Yeah, is he not back with his brother again?
Well, maybe. I'm not too sure.
Never know where he is. He's always got different coaches.
Scotty, not out of the realms of possibility.
Oh, his best is good enough.
Yeah.
Can he refine it? Lucas Herbert on debut at the Open, Clates.
Did you get his clubs back?
Well, this is the big story. I mean, for those who don't know, British Airways, and you know, we have to name them because you know they've let him down badly here. His clubs just didn't arrive in Britain. He gave himself a lot of time to get there, and I know you've had a bit of a discussion with him about this on Twitter, I believe. Did you have a discussion?
I remember I was playing with, not to name drop, but I'm going to name drop Ivan Lendl. He was talking about
you were playing golf or tennis.
We were playing golf, and Jordan Spieth, I think, had broken a driver or something on the Tuesday or Wednesday before a major. And Lendl couldn't believe it was beyond his comprehension that anyone would not have a backup with him right there. Like, what's he doing?
I said, well, you don't often
break your driver. He said, but, you know, you don't often break your driver. But if you do, so, you know, Lendl, who was, you know, he had the plastic bag on the rackets and,
yeah,
he warmed up with 7 games with the first racket and then 9 games. Even he changed the way tennis was played in terms of how meticulous he was with his preparation. He would find it beyond comprehension that a golf pro wouldn't have an identical set of clubs ready to be shipped at a minute's notice to wait. So you lose your clubs, you call FedEx, get those clubs here. And if the clubs are in Australia and you're in Britain, they're there in 2 days. He would find it beyond comprehension that
it's a fair question.
Every pro in the world wouldn't have that. I think Tiger had that.
But this is from the man who you know is more robotic in tennis than he made Nick Faldo look like Jay-Z. That's how tight he was.
But that's how he made himself a great player by his attention to detail. It's a funny story about Lendl.
He's a decent golfer, isn't he?
It's a terrific player. Peter Fowler asked him if it was true. So I heard a story that he said Chuck told me a story. Chuck told me he said Lendl used to ride his bike from his home as far in one direction as he could until he threw up. And he said he would get back on the bike and ride home. I said, is that true? He said, that's not true. So I never got off the bike.
Oh, this is extraordinary. We always go down these paths with Clates. It's magnificent. The other debutant from an Australian perspective, we didn't talk much about Lucas Herbert there. I actually think he's a sneaky chance if he brings his best game. I don't think he's fazed by the moment, put it that way. Whether he can put 4 rounds together and under the pressure of an open, it's another story. But I think he's capable of feeling at home if he's in the groove.
Yeah, you know, he was not much good at the Open, but US Open, but that was incredibly difficult. So, I mean, for a young guy on your first Open, making the cut's decent.
Yeah.
Which is not, I mean, Ben Curtis won at Royal St. George's in his first Open, but you know, if you go there and make your cut and play decently, that's a pretty good week for someone unused to the tournament and the conditions.
Okay, so he qualified through via Singapore in the Open qualifying series. One to qualify out of the Australian Open, Blakey, and was the other rookie Australian at the Open this year is Cam Davis. How do you rate his chances?
Yeah, look, as Clate said, I would imagine he'll have high expectations, but I think realistically, just get out there and try to make the cut and play four rounds and get used to the crowds and stuff like that. He's been playing on the web in America. He hits it long. I mean, he'll hit it over a few of the crosswalks, you know, if he gets downwind and the ball starts bouncing, you know, watch out the crowds. But, you know, I wouldn't think, I'd be surprised if he won, but I'd love to see him play well.
Clates, what about Brett Rumford?
Yeah, no good last week. Was he 10 over last week? I think. Yeah, no. Yeah. Rummy's always amazes me how he's got that amazing short game. If he could only just hit it, it'd be terrific. But of course, if he could hit it, he wouldn't have the short game. So, or it'd be Tiger Woods. But, you know, he's, how old's Rummy?
40, I believe. 40?
Yeah, he's on the dark side of 40.
Well, he could be the best bunker player in the world still, couldn't he? Possibly.
Well, his short game's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, he can hit it off the charts.
There's a YouTube clip if our subscribers and listeners want to put it in of Rummy hitting a lob wedge with the blade laid open over the top of his golf bag and into a, I think it's a tin or a cup,
a head
or
cover
something.
Yeah.
It's a full shot that goes about 5 yards. A bit like the one that's out there of Phil Mickelson hitting it over Dave Pell's
head,
with a 64-degree wedge laid open and playing a full shot.
Now, the last Australian, of course, is Matt Jones, who probably coughed up a big chance to bank a big check at the John Deere this week. Do we give Matt Jones, a former Australian Open champion, any chance here?
Of finishing in the top 10? Or winning?
Winning it.
Well, no, but he's a terrific player.
Yeah. So he seems to have that all-round game with suit canoes.
If he played well, he's a top 10 finisher in the Open, Matt Jones, yeah.
And my phone has just gone off here. John Sutherland, one of Golf Australia's most learned golf analysts. He's got spies.
Ivo Witten of Golf Australia.
Correct, that's what we call him. He's got spies everywhere around the world, and he's just had one report to him, and I quote from Canusti, "Adam Scott has practically lived on the golf course for the last 2 to 3 weeks. Rain has picked up now, though, so should be a challenge for them all." From on the ground in Canusti. Adam Scott, there you go. I wonder if Ivo himself will invest a couple of shekels, although we're not allowed to.
Adam's like Tiger Woods. You remember how good they were, and you look at how good that swing still looks, and you think, how can he not still play? How can he not be a real chance to win this thing?
Yeah,
just go and play well, because he's got to putt well.
Well, this is
what's
the
he putting with the David Hearn method or wow, how about that? That was a
David Hearn, yeah. Well, with Scotty, didn't Steve Williams basically said to everyone who mattered that Scotty should win just about every week? Didn't he? He thought he was so good
back in the day.
Yeah,
but that's the thing; it's back in the day.
Yeah, and of course,
the day comes and goes very quickly, as we continue to mention on this podcast.
The other guy we haven't mentioned is the U.S. Open champion.
I know.
And he's very good.
Brooks Koepka's done his apprenticeship in Europe too. So, I mean, you know, he should be more familiar with these conditions than a lot of the Americans in the field.
Yeah. You know, he's very good, clearly.
All right. Five words or less, Clates. Give us your selection.
Wow. Koepka. Fleetwood. I like Fleetwood. Cam Smith is a roughie. Not to win, but to be up there somewhere. Do the Jack Newton, perhaps.
Blakey.
Tiger. I think Tiger's going to... Yeah, you know, if he's going to win something, it's something like this.
I agree. He's a chance. I might sort of stick my head out and say Justin Rose. I think he might work his way
around. Stick it out and take the third favourite?
Yeah, that's not sticking your head out at all. Justin Rose might be the favourite.
He's one of the best players in
this. Yeah, Justin Rose is fantastic. Yeah.
I'm prepared to totally discount Tiger Woods. As a roughie, I like Francesco Molinari. I think he's just in ripping form.
And sure is.
Yeah, I think as a roughie, I think I like him. But I actually do like Justin Rose and Tommy Fleetwood, and Mark Leishman will always get my nod as being in contention until he decides that it's not for him.
Yeah, Fleetwood's good. It'd be nice to see him play the Australian Open. I wonder how much he costs these days.
He's put another couple of zeros on his demand list, unfortunately, the way he's been going this year. Anyway, we could talk about the Open all day. We've got a massive show to press on with. After the break, we're going to chat with a new name on the Australian golf scene, Adam Thorpe, who had a huge win at the World Junior Championship in Torrey Pines, and there's so much more after that.
Hi, I'm Minji Lee, and I'm proud to be an ambassador for MyGolf, Australian Golf's National Junior Program. One of my favourite things about coming back to Australia is seeing all the kids getting into golf. MyGolf is every Aussie kid's first step on their golfing pathway. It's all about fun and friendship, learning golf and life skills in a safe and healthy environment. So, if your child is between 5 and 12 years old, be sure to find a program near you at mygolf.org.au.
G'day, I'm Jarrett Felton, and I love catching up with Inside the Rope.
Well, a very special guest. Not often we sort of highlight a junior golfer, Blakey, but not often we have this sort of achievement come along. Adam Thorpe has joined us all the way from Las Vegas, which is also impressive for our little show. Adam, of course, the winner of last week's World Junior Championship at Torrey Pines, no less. Congratulations and welcome, Adam.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having
me. What a monumental week in your young career.
Yeah, it's pretty special for me.
What did you have anything like that in mind? No offense to you at all, mate. You haven't been a high profile amateur coming through the ranks, but you've certainly blown the wheels off a lot of people as you rushed past them last week. Is it something you had in mind that you could achieve, or is it just something that sort of fell into place for you?
Well, really, the goal coming into the tournament was just to come top 10 and just be in the mix, really. And then as the week wore on, just became more realistic. And
before we ask you about, you know, what the tournament means and the honour roll and all those sort of questions, you better walk us through your last half a dozen holes, because largely speaking, you had it under control until the fourth round, and things sort of seemed to get a bit tense in the last, well, hour and a half maybe, until the last hole.
The first 9 or 10 holes, I was around one shot back the whole time. And then with four holes to go, I had a four-shot lead. And all of a sudden, once I find that out, I got a bit nervous and made a horrendous three-putt on the 15th hole from about 20-foot uphill. And then another three-putt on 17 from like 10-foot. Got a bit nervous and then realised that I hadn't actually won it yet and had to calm myself down and thankfully made birdie at the last.
This is at the famous Torrey Pines, of course. So what did you do on the last? I understand you snuck in an absolutely sensational wedge for your third.
I hit my drive up the left, just into the rough, and had a bit of a poor lie. So I decided to lay up to about 72 metres out. And then, hit it to about 15 foot, held the putt.
And was it the same putt that Tiger holed to, get into the playoff at the US Open a few years ago? Was it on the same side, the curling right to lefter, or was it underneath the hole?
Yeah, not quite. It was downhill. The same pin, but, just above the pin.
Okay. Talk us through your life in golf. You're a Federal Golf Club guy out of Canberra. Did you always live in Canberra? And what else have you done that would have taken anyone's notice? Have you won anything else that was big at all?
I've lived in Canberra my whole life and been a member of Belconnen and Federal pretty much my whole life. But, that was my first big win, really. I've had a few seconds, quite a lot in the last 12 months, but, nothing like that.
And could you describe your game for us? Are you, is it your hitting that is your strength, or is it your short game or a mixture of everything, or what is it?
Yeah, well, usually it's probably my long game and my irons, but the last month or so I've been working pretty hard at my short game, and it definitely saved me all week. It's definitely the strong point of my game out there.
Is the plan, Adam, to go to college over there once you're finished? I'm assuming you're still in school here, or you finished school here?
Yeah, still in school, halfway through as well.
Okay, so is the plan to go to school over there once you've finished here?
Yep, looking to go to US college in 2019. And probably looking to make a decision in the next month or so where we are.
Yeah, Clates, I'm interested in your opinion on this. There's a lot of junior championships around the planet, and this one's by name the World Junior Championship, and by its honour roll, just one of the crackers. Mm. I mean, Tiger Woods, Jason Day, to name a couple, and a host of other household names have won it. Your thoughts on those sort of things, and what pressure does winning this title put on Adam?
Well, it doesn't put any pressure on you. It kind of shows that you're a decent player. I guess it's like all those things. When you're a junior, it doesn't matter how quickly you get good. It's how good you get. Mm. So there have been, for every Tiger Woods, there's been, not to put a dampener on this at all, but for every Tiger Woods, I'm sure there's a guy who's won that tournament that no one's ever heard of again. So it's just, it clearly shows you can play, and it shows that
you're on the right track.
You're on the right track, and what you do in the next for 5 years is critical, really. But I always looked at Seve was my kind of hero growing up. He was my age, but he won the Pedreña Caddy. Seve won the Pedrania Caddy Championship. That was it. And then he turned pro, and 18 months later, he was second in the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale. So there are no sort of formulas as to
the Pedrania Caddy Championship.
That was the only tournament he'd ever played.
Ever heard of that one, Adam?
Yeah. No, I've never heard of that one.
Well, mate, what's happening in Vegas? Did your dad and mum say, okay, this is a little bit of a prize for you? You can just get out and about in Vegas? Are you out and about a bit, or...?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, just having a holiday with the family. Just having some fun.
That nice. Wasn't like the year 12 that you and I did, Blakey.
That's very upmarket, mate.
Now, Adam, I'm interested in what Clate said there. Like, you know, clearly it's put your name on the radar of many different people, but does it add to your sort of desire? Does it add to the pressure you feel? Does it just another stepping stone in what you want to become? And how do you tackle those next 5 years?
Yeah, pretty much it's just, another stepping stone, and doesn't really change that much for me. And I might get some more opportunities to play some bigger tournaments. Pretty much just looking forward to the next step.
And how do you think you'll go with a target on your back next time you peg it up?
Not sure. Hopefully pretty good. I don't think it'll change that much, really, when I start playing.
And just, I mean, one last one before we let you go back into the Vegas nightlife there. The names that we mentioned, Tiger and Jason Day, I've read that they're your heroes. Is that true? How do you rank those guys?
Yeah, definitely. Jason and Tiger are just, by far, two coolest people. And, definitely my heroes.
Awesome, mate. Well, you've taken a big, big step in the direction of following them, and we're really grateful you took some time away out of your, very troubling Year 12 studies that you're obviously undertaking at the moment. So, congratulations from all at around golf in Australia, and tremendous win. And hopefully, we'll chat to you again this summer at home.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, mate.
Adam Thorpe there, well, a bright young talent. I can't believe he's in Vegas, Blake. He's doing in the middle of his year 12 studies, but...
Didn't want to expand on that too much, did he?
No, I suspect that he's
not. Oh, he's with his folks.
He might have gone all in on the final table.
Well, one thing with him, I was asking you before, Hazy, off air, like, I hadn't heard much about him before. He wasn't part of the New South Wales program, and that's, so he's got him almost jumped out of a little bit out of nowhere, has he?
He has, very much so, yeah. And I mentioned that to him there, and I don't think he could take offence because there's so many good... young prospects coming through the Golf New South Wales ranks right now. And Canberra often gets overlooked, but it's part of the New South Wales territory. And one of the names I'm about to mention in a second, Josh Armstrong, he is from down that way, and he plays his pennant up in Sydney now, or pennants, I should say, when we're talking about that.
No, pennant.
I still can't come to terms with
that. Yeah, pennants, what's that about?
Well, they play for two flags, apparently. anyway, look, Josh Armstrong's another from Canberra, and there's a whole range of young people coming through out of the ACT who are really, showing a lot of potential. And, full credit to Adam Thorpe. I mean, that is a major, major event on the junior calendar. There are plenty of things that claim to be a world title, but that's, I think, probably the closest thing that's legit to that.
Yeah, I kind of like Lawrence Donegan's take on junior golf, that you shouldn't have to play more than 50 miles from your house whilst you're a junior golfer.
That's a fair point. I mean, that story you told about Seve, that's extraordinary. But everything you say to us about Seve is extraordinary, as is the number of Australian achievements in golf. And these people so far from 50Ks outside their home, Clates, this is going to take a while to roll through all these. But the achievements of some of the kids, particularly in the United States in the last little while, has been unbelievable. A massive shout to Gabby Ruffles, who... we've mentioned her brother a lot, Blakey, on this show, but she's put her own name up in lights at the North and South Amateur at Pinehurst number 2 this week. It ended up finishing second and lost the match play final 2-1 to a young American called Stephanie Lau, but she acquitted herself beautifully through the week.
Yeah, Gabby Ruffles is an amazing talent, really. I mean, she's obviously got some good genes there. And I mean, she didn't play any golf until she was probably about 14, I think.
Yeah, she was a good tennis player. She got out of tennis.
I think she might have been, a Florida state level tennis player growing up in Florida. But, she's a real talent because she's only, just coming to golf.
Yeah,
really.
She's probably 4 years into her golf career. Amazing. It's quite amazing. And, already a shining light at USC in her first year, Clates.
Yeah, I think Steph Bunky played well. She's semi-final.
Yeah, Steph Bunky reached the quarterfinals.
And Julian Sue was the last.
Julian Sue and Dee Russell went out at the round of 16. And another shout, and we'll talk more about her in a second, to Becky Kay, who was a semi-finalist and actually had the eventual winner, Stephanie Lau, on toast. She was Lau rolled in a birdie putt from off the front fringe on the 17th when she was one down to halve the hole effectively because Becky was in tight. So, you know, give or take there, it might have been an All-Australian final, but a really promising result for a couple of young Aussie girls there.
Good course too. Good to see they're playing a great course like Pinehurst. It's a
an
amazing golf course. So great experience to
play. Pinehurst number two, wasn't it?
Number two, yeah.
Number two. Is that the best one there?
Yep.
Yeah. It's hosted so many Open Championships. So fantastic. Now we'll stick with the, we'll go ahead to the New South Wales Junior. Actually, I probably should go stay in the US while we can. Josh Armstrong, the aforementioned Josh Armstrong, did really well. Finished the best of the Aussie contingent at the Players Amateur, moved up to finish ninth in the final round with a beautiful 65. So that's a good result for him. He's coming back from an injury, so that's done really well. Zinho Garcia, another New South Welshman, finished seventh in the Eastern Amateur in Portsmouth, Virginia. Andrew Richards finished 38th there, which is also a good result. And West Australian Hayden Barron finished fourth, and another Sydney-sided John Lyris, 34th at the Trans-Miss Amateur in Columbus, Ohio. So some great results there. And back on the home soil, if I can continue to find...
What about Doey Choi, Hazy? Well, was she runner-up in the World Junior?
Doey Choi was in her in the women's section of the World Junior, and also, along with Steph Kiriakou, won the teams event there. So a great result there for the two Sydney girls who are great mates, and they're performing really well on the big stage. And there's more to... We'll tell you more about them in a second as well. In the New South Wales Junior, Jai Picken, who's the name we all should probably take notice of, absolutely blew the field away. He was 13 shots better than Louis Dobler, who we mentioned several times, to win at the Charlestown Golf Club. So a great result for Jai Picken. And Queensland's High Park just had a casual eagle finish to win by four shots in the girls section of the New South Wales Junior Championship. So a good result for those guys as well. You mentioned those girls, Blakey, the boys and girls on separate coasts, US Junior Championships have started today. We're recording on Tuesday afternoon. But as we speak, we're absolutely chuffed. The girls, Steph Kiriakou, Madison Hinson-Tolshard from Perth, and Dawei Choi, all T27, two over in the first round, got to get in the top 64 to advance to the match play. And on the other coast, in another famous course, Clates, Bolter's Roll, Carl Phillips has chewed up the upper course and is a equal first-round leader after a brilliant 66. So that's great golf from the young fella.
Yeah, he's good. He's been around for a long time now. He's a veteran at
16 now.
Yeah,
we've had him on the show too.
He's been playing for tournaments for 10 years. Really.
I was writing stories about him in The Age when he was about 8, I reckon.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time.
I mean, it's early days, and people will be listening to this later in the week, and things will have changed, but he's basically assured himself of a spot in the match play, and if he continues to play like that, he could well advance deep into the week, Blakey.
Yeah, look, Carl's going really well, and he's in the college system, or going into the college system. He's going to Stanford, is that right, where Tiger...
I think he is.
Heading to Stanford.
Just a quirky one before we take a break from this sort of amateur portion of the show this week. The leader of the girls event, which is at Poppy Hills, Clates, on the Monterey Peninsula. I'm not sure if you've been around that one.
No, just near, I've been there, but I've never been around it.
Just near Pebble Beach, of course. The leader at 9-under is a girl, Blakey, who you'll be familiar with if I tell you a couple of things, Lucy Lee.
So this is the girl who qualified for the US Open?
At age 11, four years ago.
Yeah.
So she's just turned 16 and today carved out a 9-under par round at Poppy Hills to lead by a light year.
And she said she didn't realise it was a par 71, otherwise she would have tried harder to birdie the last to break 60.
And she's pint-sized. I think that's just an incredible thing for her to do that. Now, Clates, you often baffle us with a bit of trivia. I'm going to roll through some names here for you, and you can stop me when you know the answer. What is the connecting link between these people? Peter Toogood, Robert Stevens, Bruce Devlin, Doug Backley.
Yeah, they won the World Amateur in 1958 at St Andrews.
Fantastic. It didn't take long. I thought I might get through two or three of those teams, but
Eisenhower Cup
winning teams on the men's side of things.
Bobby Jones was there.
Bob, in that year, was he?
He was there. It was the first one. Yeah, so Bobby Jones was there. And
Australia's just had this an extraordinary rate of success on both men's and women's. The Eisenhower Trophy being for the men's, the Espirito Santo for the women's, and this week, Blakey announced, we announced two, I think, potentially really strong teams to go back. And, of course, the men's team is the defending champion.
And where is that being played? In Brazil or somewhere?
No, it's being played in Ireland. The girls at the end of through the end of August into start of September, and the boys the following week.
So Minwoo Lee, who's familiar to this listeners of this program, the brother of Minji and a fine player in his own right, former US, you know, won the US Junior. David Micheluzzi is a Victorian player, just dominant amateur player of the last 12 months, really, isn't he? And Shea Wilkes-Cobbs from Queensland.
Yeah, and one of the great young putters that we've produced for quite a while. So that's a strong, really strong men's team.
Really good.
Yeah, they've got high hopes. The three of them, Shea's around number 30 in the world. The other two have been in and out of the top 10 for the last 3 or 4 months. Of course, the American college scene sort of skews those rankings, but they're both legitimate top 10 players.
Minwoo turn pro soon, do you think? It's got to be coming soon.
Yeah, I would say that all those guys would look towards the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship in October, early November, whenever it is, up in Singapore, and then I think you'll start to hear some things after that.
Where are they playing in Ireland?
It's at a course. You asked me that question, Clayton, and I haven't got it in front of me.
That's right.
But I'll come back to you with the answer in a second, but it's a course where there's a Montgomery course. And
They're playing Carlton House. That's
Carlton
right.
House, that's it.
That.
Thank you.
That's the only course in the world where pretty much every greenside bunker you're in, you can't see the bottom of the flag.
Really?
Oh, they're so
they're that deep.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's not very hard, but it's the greenside bunkers are like hitting out of this room here. They're just bizarre.
Grace Kim, Becky Kay, and Kirsty Hodgkins are making up the women's team there. Hazy, Grace Kim had a start in the Women's Australian Open earlier this year. That was great fun for her, and she's been over. Actually, her and Becky Kay have been over spending some time with Kari Webb during the Women's Major a couple of weeks ago as well. I saw some good photos on the social media of that.
Yeah, the Women's PGA Championship, a great chance for them to get to know Kari a bit better. Second time that Becky Kay has had that experience through the Kari Webb Scholarship. And they also got the added bonus of spending time with Sarah Jane Smith and Hannah Green while they were there. So, you know, a phenomenal week for the girls, joined by Kirsty Hodgkins, who was part of the winning Queensland interstate team three years ago now, and then disappeared off our domestic radar to go and play at the University of Colorado. Is going really nicely there. She's up into the top 100 in the world amateur rankings. Is actually the highest ranked of our three girls who were in the team. So a great result for her as well, and a lovely young lady. Former Riversdale Cup champion. The two who were above those three in the women's amateur world rankings, a shout to them, Julianne Sue and Robin Choi, both have elected to play the first stage of the LPGA Tour Q School, which is coincidental with the World Amateur Teams Championship. So we're unlucky not to have them, but fully, I know Brad James is fully supportive of their hopes to go pro and maybe take it onto the LPGA Tour straight away. So a big week for coming up for them in about 4 or 5 weeks' time, both on the men's and women's side, and obviously all in Australian golf are right behind you. So that, I mean, it's probably the longest amateur wrap we've ever had on the show, and I make no apologies for that because they're the future of our game. We'll come back and we'll talk a bit more of the pro side of things straight after this break.
Hi, this is Sherelle McMahon. Swing Fit is the fun, healthy, social way for women to get started in golf. You'll learn the basics of the golf swing and how to putt over a 6-week program and get your whole body moving through yoga and Pilates style exercises. You don't need any golf knowledge or equipment. Simply turn up in comfy clothing and get started. You'll be surrounded by like-minded people and receive constant support. So get outdoors, meet new friends and learn a sport that you can play for the rest of your life. To find a program near you, visit swingfit.com.au.
G'day, it's Nick O'Hearn here. Whenever I get the chance, I catch up with Inside the Ropes to follow up on all the latest golf, and I urge you all do the same. It's a great show.
Oh, welcome back to Inside the Ropes. So much still to talk about, so stick with us. We've got to go around all the Australian pro results around the world and have our normal two bobs worth on a few things. One of those, both of you gentlemen, I'm really interested in your thoughts on the US PGA Tour. Unfortunately, the dominant body in terms of scheduling around the world has launched its 2018-2019 calendar with a promise of certain things at the start of the 2019-20 wraparound season. Probably most notably, we're moving the Players' Championship forward to March. We're moving the US PGA Championship up a couple of months into May. So we're going to have something from the Players through the British Open, which would be the last of the majors. if you include the players as the sort of nominal fifth, we're going to have one every month for 5 months, and then we're going to go into the playoffs. The playoffs will be 3 weeks instead of four. A couple of tournaments have bitten the dust here as a result. But I think from our end of things, the addition of a Japanese event for the 2019-20 calendar is going to be very problematic, squeezing tournaments at the end of the year. Have you guys got any thoughts about that?
Well, they're not doing us many favours, given that we've paid them $25 million or something for the President's Cup. So that obviously hasn't garnered us any sympathy or help from the PGA Tour. Obviously, it's America first, which is, we've heard that enough in the last 18 months. So clearly they don't care about anyone else other than themselves, which is fine. So we've got to look after ourselves. The question is, do you move the Open end of February, jam it up with the Vic Open and the Women's Open and Perth? And because the problem is it clashes with Dubai. So you're not going to get...
Well, that's this year. It might be different the following year.
Yeah, so the question is, do you move it out of November? If the US Tour is going to continue to squeeze November with added tournaments in Asia.
Do you see any point, or have you heard anything about the Australian Open potentially tagging on to the PGA Tour and becoming a fifth tournament in the Asia Pacific region?
Oh, I haven't heard about that, but I'm sure someone's thought of that.
Yeah, I think Hazy, there's an argument to say with our lower prize money, if you can't beat them, join them, kind of thing. We need the Australian Open to be part of the European Tour or the PGA Tour if we can.
And what you need is you need our best players to come and play without sticking a hand out for just almost seven-figure sums, because none of them are worth that. And in the year that Peter Thompson's just died, they ought to, out of respect for him, at least come back and do what he did and play for nothing, because he's a much better player than any of them ever were or will be. So it's time that our players started supporting the Open and coming back without their hands out for way more than they're worth.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, you're here on that one. So let's just switch across from the USPGA Tour to the LPGA Tour. A third winner. Can you believe this, Blakey? A third tie winner on the LPGA Tour. I'm not talking tournaments, like one person winning three. I'm talking three separate Thailand women have won events on the LPGA Tour this year with the victory of Tadapa Swanapura, or I should say, this week.
This is where you need, our colleague.
Oh, this is where Mari normally shines with the pronunciation of these names.
Swanapura. Yeah.
Tadapa. You can call her Tadapa if that makes it easily. But
they're producing some players, aren't they?
I want to ask you.
The ties are good.
Clay, I've got to ask you another trivia question. You haven't brought us anything yet. So since the LPGA Tour moved back to the American leg of its season, which was in mid-March, how many Americans have won on the LPGA Tour?
Probably going to say none, eh?
No, but it's only one.
Only one?
Annie Park won a few weeks ago.
She came from nowhere, way back, didn't she? Just a low round to win. That's
exactly right. And it was in New Jersey. How about this, Blakey? This is since March 13 on the LPGA Tour, the winners by nationality. Korea, Sweden, Canada, Thailand, New Zealand, Korea, Thailand, Australia, Thailand, the United States, Korea, Japan, Korea, Thailand.
Yeah, well, the LPGA Tour, it's an amazing tour, really.
It's a brilliant tour. I mean, it's a proper world tour.
It's fantastic.
It's a proper world tour that goes around the world. You know, they don't extort the tournaments for appearance money.
Yeah.
In fact, it's almost a non-existent part of that tour, I think. And, you know, they do an amazing job in promoting themselves and doing what's best. Because they understand if they don't, the thing will die. So the women have done an incredible job. And the best thing that's happened for golf is that's happened. That the Americans are no longer the dominant force, but it's become a truly world game. And the Asian players are incredibly good. I mean, the Koreans obviously are great, but NASA, Hakuoto, the Japanese kid she's won once or twice this year.
Once and runner-up once.
Played some fantastic golf. She's a great player.
Yeah.
Women's golf, Hazy, the U.S. Senior Women's Open, the first ever U.S. Senior Women's Open, which Laura Davies absolutely slaughtered them, won it by 10 shots in Chicago. Chicago Golf Club,
which is one of the great old courses. Tremendous
golf course. Jane Crafter and Sue Worcester, who's an amateur who plays out of the National here outside Melbourne, Jane Crafter finished tied 28th and Sue Worcester finished tied 40th, which is a hell of an effort for an amateur player.
Huge achievement. I mean, just pegging it up in the same field as Laura Davies is a great result for a, you know, pretty much a local amateur. Self-funded. She qualified by winning the Canadian Senior Women's last year, and huge achievement from Sue Worcester. And I was really impressed. Jane Crafter shot a pretty average first round.
82, right? The first round.
82, I think. Yeah. And she said on Twitter, I said, you know, congrats to all the three Aussie women, because Jan Stevenson was the third, who missed the cut ultimately by a shot. I said to her on Golf Australia Twitter, you know, good luck, keep it going, well done. She vowed she was going to kick some butt the next couple of days, and I'm not sure if scores of 74-ish.
The average score was 79, so it's obviously played pretty tough the way they
It's a hard golf course.
They
it's,
set
it's
it up.
The first 18-hole course in America.
But Joanne Carner, who's 79 years of age, a Hall of Famer, shot her age on the first day.
That's awesome.
That is a great story.
That is a great story.
Yeah. Because there
were some pretty ordinary scores going on.
Yeah.
So that's a phenomenal
one. That might
be
something
course.
For you to aim for in the next 20 years or so, Clates, shooting your age.
I think we should have an Australian men's senior open in Australia. Would be a good start. Yeah, great course. I think they expanded the membership for the longest time. It was 125 members. I think they just went to 135. So it's one of those sort of closed gates, ultra exclusive. But a beautiful golf course, amazing golf course.
Web.com.
Before we do that, Blakey, I just want to mention Sarah Kemp, who on the LET, which we sometimes don't talk about as much as we should, but Sarah Kemp is still cruising along beautifully, second on the order of merit after half the season's gone. She missed the cut at the LPGA event that was won by Sawana Pura, along with Rebecca Artis, unfortunately. But I just wanted to make mention of that because we often gloss over it and we apologise for that. But the LET is, you know, obviously a good second choice for Sarah Kemp to play. She wants to play more in the US, but she's doing well and still second on the order of merit at this stage of the season.
Yeah, well, that's a tour that's been, it's no secret that it's been struggling. A lot of tournaments have dropped out, and you know, they're fortunate enough that they've got the Vic Open, which is probably their biggest event, isn't it? So.
Outside of the British Women's Open, yeah.
And Rebecca Artis, 23rd, Whitney Hillier, 40th, and Steph Nahr, 51st, also on that order of merit. So we'll keep an eye out for those girls as their season progresses.
And Curtis, like I wanted to mention on the web.com, started off pretty well in the event there, the Utah Championship. Faded a bit, ended up tied 49th. He's 78th on the money. List needs to get in the top 25 at some point. To get his card. Clates, you've caddied for him a lot. Do you speak to him? Have you spoken to him recently? I think he's probably struggling a bit.
He is. He needs to get to the top 70, I think. Get in the finals.
The finals?
Yeah, 75. So he needs to 75. So he needs to get moving. He's a much better player than that. But he's an imaginative player. Those courses aren't great to him. They're pretty dull and boring. And
that would be nearly the worst tour for him to be on in the world, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely the worst.
Why doesn't he go to Europe?
Well, I think he wants to go to Europe. I think his plan was to go to the European Tour school this year. So.
Mind you, the European Tour don't play on the best courses either.
No, they don't, but you play some good ones.
What about?
Not that they don't. Well, I've never played a Web.com event in America, but they don't look that interesting, and they look very easy.
What about your man, Clates, Cameron Champ?
Wait till he comes out next year. He hits it. What did he average last week? 350 or something?
Yeah, and he hit one on that par five over the trees on the corner of 400 plus, and most of it was actually carry.
This kid hits it just. He's making Johnson and Watson look like pop scanners.
Yeah, and this is what Curtis Luck is running into here, because that's what they've brought up playing, and that's not what the game that he grew up learning. And you know, his imagination just doesn't wash on the courses like this one in Utah that they played. And unfortunately, Blakey, some other not great results. Brett Druitt, Rian Gibson, and Jamie Arnold all missed the cut, and they're the ones who are riding.
Well,
the
Rian's up on the money list. You know, he had a win earlier in the year, didn't he? So
he's down to 32nd. So he's out of the top 25. Oh, okay. And this is the problem. All these guys.
The problem with that tour, as Ogilvy said, it's a graveyard, that place. It's the worst card in the world to have a web.com card. I don't know. I mean, I was talking to Darren Cole about this at the start of the week, whether guys like Steve Allen and Matt Goggin would have had better careers if they'd stayed in Europe and played there.
Jeff, he missed the cut at his last start. I'm not sure whether it was last weekend or the weekend before. He's announced and made it public that he's coming back to live in Melbourne and bring the family back. With that, they obviously don't show him on TV, but he's just, the results look like he's kind of limping to the finish line.
Yeah, he's He's had a couple of decent starts and missed 67, 72 and missed a cut by a shot. And yeah, I think he's
mentally
look,
he might
I'm spoken, but I just think he's bad enough of it by the look of it. Yeah,
he's back in Australia.
Just before we leave the US, just a shout, Blakey. I know we're trying. Hopefully, one day at some stage soon, we'll be able to get John Sendon. You know, he's got a lot on his plate, obviously at the moment, but. A comeback of sorts this week in terms of form. Not only he played four good rounds and finished 34th at the John Deere Classic.
Best result of the year for Sendo. Yeah. He's obviously missed a lot of golf with his son Jacob being ill, and he's back now playing. And Jacob's made you know a good recovery. So absolute shout out to one of the nicest guys out there, Johnny Sendo.
And just a quick wrap of some other men's tours around the world, especially to Brett Coletta, who's been a
fourth in Canada, wasn't he?
Fourth on the Mackenzie Tour in Canada, and he's moved up to number 19 in the order of merit. So that's huge, Clayton, isn't it?
For good. He's really good. He's a gun. He needs to get out there and do something, but he's technically terrific.
Yeah, and I think he's really, from all reports through the Golf Australia High Performance Team, he's really starting to find his feet. So yeah. I would expect him to come and do big things as the Canadian season winds, well, towards its conclusion. He's only about not even halfway yet. So he's already up at the number 19 in the order of merit, chasing top five to get onto the web.com tour next year. At the Yantai Championship, the time-honoured Yantai Championship, Blakey, on the China PGA Tour, Dean Lawson was 10th, Kerr Lewis's own, up to 25th in the rankings. Max McArdle continues to be the highest on the order of merit there. Missed the cut this week in Yantai, but still remains number 18. But a shout out to Bryden McPherson, who was very entertaining on our podcast.
He was good last week.
He was fantastic. And his second consecutive top 15 finish just shows Clates that he can do media in the week of a tournament and go out and play well.
Yeah. Peter Thompson used to won the Open and walked into the press tent and typed out his story for the Age. So it just isn't that complicated.
And on the Asian tour, Blakey, the Indonesian Open. Four really strong results. Maverick Ancliffe, Matt Miller, Steve Jeffress, Daniel Fox, all in the top 20 behind South African Justin Hendry. Justin Harding, rather, and a couple of weeks off on the Japanese tour so we can cool our jets over there. It's been a pretty productive area of the world, the Asian swing for us lately.
Yeah, outstanding results there.
Anything else you want to bring to the table?
I just wanted to ask both of you what you thought about Brittany Lincecum, who's one of the longer hitters on the LPGA Tour. She's playing this week in the Barbasol Championship in Kentucky on the PGA Tour. So she was obviously invited to have a crack at that, see what she thought, and she said, okay, I'll have a go at it. So how do you think she'll go? She's a long hitter. She's a terrific player.
She's a long hitter. She'd be the shortest hitter on the PGA Tour, probably.
Yeah. So I looked this up just because I thought we'd mention this. She's averaging 269 yards.
She's the shortest by 20 yards, isn't it?
Number 10 on the LPGA Tour this year. So she's one of the longer. I mean, she's just in the top 10.
That would be the shortest hitter on the PGA Tour. By. I think Zach Blair might be 273 or 4. So she'll miss the cut, I assume. But that's not being...
it's not derogatory. It's just a statement of fact.
There's never been a woman who's...
Or opinion.
In recent times... Who's made the cut in it? I think Michelle Wee made it once in Korea, I think, didn't she? She played a Korean tour event and made the cut, but and none of them made it. I mean, they can't compete at that level.
And she had some ordinary luck, Clate, shall we say, was it the 72nd hole, the event won by the Thai girl, Sawanapura?
Oh, she horseshoed a horrible, just brutal horseshoe, shocker. Like almost a 360 horseshoe.
Ooh, they'll come back to
home. But, which is not to disparage women's golf. Women's golf, I love watching. Anyone who's got a good technique who's the ball well, they're great to watch. It's just that men and women shouldn't compete with each other. It's the same as men's and women's tennis. I appreciate one and the other as being separate things, but throwing them in together is as silly as putting Usain Bolt with.
Having said that, I don't mind Brittany going and challenging herself.
No, I think it's a publicity stunt.
She's done it in the week of the Open.
Yeah, it's the week of the Open, so no one's paying much attention. Yeah. I think it's, and we said she won't make the cut. She might. I mean, if she played her best, she could make the cut.
And Roger Davis is going to be the new chairman of the Australian PGA, Hazy.
Great news.
Replacing
Peter O'Malley, who stood down after his terms come to an end. Ian Baker-Finch joins the board, but also an equally important announcement is that Carol Brownlee has become the first female elected to the board of the PGA of Australia. So that's phenomenal. Hopefully we get to speak to Carol in the coming weeks and months. I think she's probably going to put some fresh air through the PGA. Clayton, I want to ask you one thing before we start wrapping it up. You mentioned before David Hearn. I'm not full bottle on what happened with David Hearn, but that seemed to me to be one of the more extraordinary situations I've seen for quite a while on a PGA Tour.
Well, there was a tweet. I can show you the picture there. The problem with this rule is, and of course the Canadians jumped to his defence, and I'm not in any way saying he's breaking the rule because only he knows what's going on.
Oh, the picture.
But the problem. So can we set this up? He was questioned by the PGA Tour rules officials after a particular day's play. I'm not sure which one it was, and he's got his left hand. He's got a long putter, and he's got it almost. Looks like it's almost anchored to his chest. And they certainly asked the question of him, and he vehemently denied that he was anchoring.
But the problem with the rule is that from that picture that I've just shown you two guys, it's impossible to tell whether he's anchoring it or not. You've got to take his word for it, which is why it's such a bad rule. Because if he's an honest player doing the right thing, you've got to be seen to be obeying the rule.
Mm.
And that is not being seen to being obeying the rule. He's not being seen to being obeying the rule.
Did you make anything of the fact that the PGA Tour actually took him away and questioned him? That's the first time that's happened, and it may well be that he's a relative. I mean, he represented Canada in the World Cup last time down here, but he's a relatively no name, and he's not American.
Well, I'm sure they've had words to McCarron and Langer on the seniors tour.
Do you think they have?
I'm sure they've asked them. I'm sure they've said, "Well, we're not anchoring it." So, and you can only it's the intent. Even if you anchor it, if you don't intend to anchor it. I think I'm right in saying that's okay. But that's why it's such a bad rule, because there's a guy who's you know, the whole world looks at that, and half of them think he's okay and half of them think he's cheating. And you can't tell, which is why it's a terrible rule. And it's
they
time,
have to change that
it's
rule.
It's time they said the putter's the shortest club in the bag and tell with the lawyers and get
should have done that the first time around.
Yeah, it's like amateur officials fudging around to try and dodge the controversy. Well, we're not banning the long putter. We're banning how you use it. So now you've got four or five guys who are using that putter, and no one knows if they're cheating or not, and it's impossible to tell, and it sure looks like they are, but you have to take their word for it.
All right, one last thing of note before we do the housekeeping. I cannot believe that we've got to this situation, and we can't invest another 15 minutes talking about the ball, but Augusta National is moving the fifth tee back 30 or 40 yards. Into land that they procured when they basically raised a suburb of Augusta. The only club that I know of that has scope financially and in a real estate capacity to continue to expand their course is doing just that. We've been quite a robust discussion on Twitter this week, Clates, about the merits of that. I can't believe that it's good for golf, and I can't imagine that when they decide that it's too much to continue to buy land and expand the course almost, annually, that Augusta National won't go rogue and enforce their own laws at some point as regards the ball.
Well, it's madness. My views are well known, but it's not a side street. That's like moving Warrigal Road. I mean, it's a big road, that road.
Berkman's Road.
Complete insanity.
But they've already got it. The relocation of it this time is just a tweak because they've basically...
So the fifth at Augusta is a dog leg, right to left dog leg. Yeah. And they want, from what I understand, they want the players to hit somewhere around a 5-iron into the green. And it's a problematic green as well.
It is. It's the one that they always say has the elephant graveyard in the front of the green. That's that hole. You don't often see it on television, but it's already a really hard hole. But they're filthy with the bunker being obsolete on the left side where it dog legs. So they want to bring that back into play. And look, it'll bring it back into play temporarily, but in 30 years' time, if we don't act and do something logical, we'll have to move it back another 30 yards.
Well, just call up Wally Ulan and say, Wally, make us 15 grosser balls. These are the specifications. If you don't like it, and put them on the tee, and that's what you're playing with, boys.
It's
gone to the point where it's completely ridiculous, and it's time these guys who run the game, the RNA and the USGA, stood up and do what they all know is the right thing to do, but they've got not the guts to do it. It's pathetic.
And I actually think it will come down to that. At some stage in the future, if they don't act, I think Augusta National will. They'll call Wally Ulan at Titleist and bring in a tournament ball specifically for this event. And it'll be just like the Formula Ford cars. Everyone will find the best golfer and not the best technology. It's going to be fascinating.
The problem is tennis can tweak the ball, but the players don't have a tennis ball endorsement. So the tennis ball manufacturers, one, don't care, and two, don't have any power. problem is all these players have ball endorsements, and tennis is now obsessed with distance, as golf is. Golf is obsessed with, the average dumb American golfer is only obsessed with how far he hits the ball.
But as Jeff Ogilvie said late last year, in baseball they brought in the wooden bats, and they banned them, and because the stadiums weren't big enough, and that's what's happened to golf. And the other thing that Jeff said that was really interesting, back at the Australian Open last year, was that everyone assumes that if they slow down the ball, that it'll slow down the amateur. People do assume that, but that's not necessarily the case. These ball manufacturers could get technology, if you told them they had to do it, that they can slow down the pro, but not slow down the amateur. And that's what Jeff said. Why do we always assume that it's going to slow down the amateur?
Yeah, I mean, the dumbest of the dumb American average amateurs think that if you take 30 yards off Dustin Johnson, you're taking 30 yards off Mary Jones. I mean, they need to do the test. 80 miles an hour, every mile an hour, through to 130. And with the two balls, how much do you lose? And it'll be under 100 miles an hour. It's almost negligible. Well, my guess is it would be almost negligible.
I certainly didn't gain much, Hazy, from these good golf balls. And I hit nice, tightless balls.
And you hit a beautiful five-yard draw too, Blakey.
Doesn't help me much.
So just want to remind everyone, this year we're running for the second successive time. Golf Australia is offering golfers around the country the chance to win the experience of a lifetime and play like a pro at the Australian Open. There's 24 lucky golfers from around the country get to play 9 holes at the Lakes during day 3 of the Australian Open, Blakey, if you don't mind, and you could be one of them. Just winners will travel to Sydney on the 16th of November this year, stay for 2 nights, receive a gift pack, and can attend the Champions Cocktail Function. Clubs and facilities around the country are currently running qualifying competitions through to the 21st of October. So get in touch with them to find out more. But if you want to play 9, so it's golf.org.au/play9. Have a look at it. It's going to be awesome. And your chance to play the national championship.
And as I keep saying every week, Hazy, if your club's not doing it, they should be. So go and ask them why they're not, because it's easy enough to do. They should all be into it.
Correct.
It's a fantastic prize.
And before I'm going to get you to read the review this week, Blakey, I'm going to handball it to you in a second. But just get your podcast here from Apple Podcasts and now Google Podcasts if you're an Android user. The new Google Podcasts app will already be loaded onto your phone and will make it easier for people to subscribe and much easier for us to explain to everyone. And as usual, we request 5-star reviews just to help us be more locatable. And we got a cracking one this week from one of your mates, Blakey, I believe. I think I'm not 100% sure if he's one of your best mates, but it's a very interesting entry into
the tagline. Yeah. It's from a guy called Golf Porn. There you go. Those guys tell it like it is. Forget music on the way to work. These guys are my new go-to. There you go. Usually Clates gets a bit of a mention on there. You know, the reviews, doesn't he?
He does, but I'm not sure that Golf Porn is sort of big into Clates' rants, is it? Have you ever heard from Golf Porn, Clates?
No, I'm not sure. Maybe he follows me on Twitter. I don't know. I'm not sure. Anyway.
Speaking of Twitter, give us a follow and get involved in the conversation. It's at @inside_the_ropes. And we encourage you to follow and tweet us and suggest some things you'd like to hear going forward. And that's just about it. I've probably spoken even more than Murray. Andy, please come back.
He'll be back next week.
Yeah, he'll be back next week, and I think the listeners' ears will be grateful. So, thanks, Blakey, for your contribution, and Clates,
loved it
as ever.
Thanks, Hazy, enjoyed it.
Thanks, and we'll be back next week for episode 53.